A reading from the second book of Kings. Naaman, commander of the army of the king of Aram, was a great man and in high favor with his master. Because of him, the Lord had given victory to Aram. The man, though a mighty warrior, suffered from leprosy. Now the Armenians, on one of their raids, had taken a young girl captive from the land of Israel, and she served Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, "If only my lord were with the prophet who is in Samaria, he would cure him of his leprosy." So Naaman went in and told his lord just what the girl from the land of Israel had said. And the king of Aram said, "Go then, I will send along a letter to the king of Israel." He went, taking with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 sets of garments. He brought the letter to the king of Israel, which read, "When this letter reaches you, you know that I have sent to you my servant Naaman, that you may cure him of his leprosy." When the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his clothes and said, "Am I God to give death or life that this man sends word to me to cure a man of his leprosy? Just look and see how he's trying to pick a quarrel with me." But when Elijah, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his clothes, he sent a message to the king. "Why have you torn your clothes? Let him come to me, that he may learn that there is a prophet in Israel." So Naaman came with his horses and chariots and halted at the entrance of Elijah's house. Elijah sent a messenger to him saying, "Go, wash in the Jordan 7 times, and your flesh shall be restored and you shall be clean." But Naaman became angry and went away saying, "I thought that for me he would surely come out and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and would wave his hand over the spot and cure the leprosy. Are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean?" He turned and went away in a rage. But his servants approached and said to him, "Father, if the prophet has commanded you to do something difficult, would you not have done it? How much more, when all he said to you was, 'Wash and be clean'?" So he went down and immersed himself 7 times in the Jordan, according to the word of the man of God. His flesh was restored like the flesh of a young boy, and he was clean. Then he returned to the man of God, he and all his company. He came and stood before him and said, "Now I know there is no God in all the earth except in Israel." Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
The Lord be with you.
And also with you.
The Holy Gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ according to Matthew. When Jesus had come down from the mountain, great crowds followed him. And there was a leper who came to him and knelt before him, saying, "Lord, if you choose, you can make me clean." He stretched out his hand and touched him, saying, I do choose. Be made clean." Immediately his leprosy was cleansed. Then Jesus said to him, "See that you say nothing to anyone, but go, show yourself to the priest, and offer the gift that Moses has commanded as a testimony to them." The Gospel of Christ.
So if you felt a sense of deja vu with our first reading from the Old Testament, it's not just in your head. We actually did that same reading just back in July. And yes, I was the one that spoke to that reading because Derwin was off celebrating at a family reunion. Now, because we are using a different lectionary now, this fall, the reading comes up again, so we deal with it. Since September, we have been walking through the history of the people of Israel. We discussed God's call to Abraham and God's promise to make him a great nation, and that in Abraham, all the families of the earth would be blessed. We saw Abraham's descendants go down into Egypt, ultimately to be enslaved by the Egyptians. And then God called Moses to lead them out of slavery. And at Mount Sinai, they received God's instructions for being God's people in their new homeland. We remember David as their greatest king who brought them relief from their enemies, but who also fell into great sin. His son Solomon was given wisdom by God to rule God's people with justice, but we saw last week that not all was right in the realm either, that some women were not supported by their families or communities as the law had instructed people, and these women were reduced to making their living by selling themselves to men. Under David and Solomon, the nation of Israel was blessed by God, had peace, and prospered. They became that great nation. However, after Solomon, the kingdom split into the north and south. So in the north were 10 tribes, and they had their capital at Samaria. Judah was in the south, and they retained the capital, Jerusalem. David's descendants remained on the throne in Judah for several hundred years or more, and we kind of get to that next week. And they had varying degrees of godliness and faithfulness to God's instructions. The story of the northern kingdom, called Israel, is a little sadder. Their kings were not from the house of David, and they changed kings and dynasties over and over and over and over again. I think in 1 year they had like 3 kings or something. They were less faithful in worshiping only Yahweh, and they ran into trouble with their neighbors, first with Syria, that in our reading is called Aram, and then later with Assyria. Ultimately, they were defeated by the Assyrians and carried off to other nations, never to return to their own homeland. And these people are what are referred to as the lost tribes of Israel. Our reading occurs in this northern kingdom of Israel during the time when they were having squabbles with Syria. The passage opens by introducing Naaman as the commander of the army of the king of Aram. Aram's just another name for Syria. Naaman had led his troops to victory over Israel. And it could be possible here that Israel was now a vassal state and paying tribute to Damascus. At the time of our story, there's an uneasy truce going on between the two countries. But it does mention there was a raid over the border and that girl was snatched and forced into slavery. So Naaman has a skin disease. They call it leprosy, but it's not like leprosy that we know of. It could have been any skin disease. And apparently it turned his skin white. So that part of his skin kind of looked dead. And he was limited in where he could go in society, and most especially, he couldn't go to worship. He wasn't completely isolated, but he wasn't completely healthy either. And I imagine he would have exhausted all the knowledge about healing that was available in his country and found no relief. The story then turns to an insignificant slave girl, and we're not even told her name. Like I said, she'd been snatched from her home in a raid, and she now served Naaman's wife. She was brave enough to tell her mistress about the prophet of Yahweh back home in Israel, saying that that prophet could heal her master if he was there. So word goes from his wife to Naaman and from Naaman to the king, and the king writes a letter to the king of Israel. Here's my general, so you can heal him. And the king is rather upset, thinking this is a political game that his enemy is playing. And he's concerned enough that he tears his clothes. Now, this is something folks in the Bible did to express deep emotion, usually grief or fear or anger. I think here it was probably fear, because Syria was a stronger nation, or at least alarm as to what is the king of Syria working at here. I think he might have been frustrated too, not knowing what he's supposed to do. And here's the general of your enemy's army standing right smack in front of you while you read this. The king's predicament the word gets to Elisha, the prophet of Yahweh, who was living in another city to the east of the capital of Samaria. And Elisha sends word to the king almost saying, "What are you going on about? Send him to me. Yahweh could cure him." And I think he didn't say, you know, "Why didn't you think of this in the first place?" So Naaman is sent off to Elisha, and he shows up, his whole entourage, you know, horses and chariots and armed men and the whole thing, parks in front of Elisha's door, and Elisha sends out a servant that says, "Go dip yourself in the Jordan River," which was not too far away, "seven times, and then you will be healed and your skin will be like the skin of a child." Well, Naaman is outraged. He at least expected Elisha to come out and greet him. He is an important man, after all. And he expected to see some razzle-dazzle. He actually says, "At least he could come out and meet me and call on his God, wave his hand over my diseased skin, and, you know, presto bingo, it would be cured and all would be well." He turns away angry. And it's his servants who speak up and convince him to try at least dipping in the Jordan. And what do you know? It works. But of course, it's not the properties of the water in the Jordan that worked the miracle. It was Naaman humbling himself to do as instructed that allowed the power of Yahweh to heal his skin through the word of Elisha. And Elisha here is referred to as the man of God. He was something more than a prophet. A prophet spoke for God, but a man of God could act for God with God's power to accomplish God's will. The Spirit of God was upon him, anointing him for his work in God's name. And Naaman got the message. He returned to Elisha's place, and this time Elisha received him. And we read about Naaman confessing he now realizes that there is no God in all the earth except in Israel. Basically, what he's saying is, "Yes, I firmly believe now the only true God is the God of Israel." Mission accomplished. So what do we learn from this passage about God, about his people, about those who are not his people? In David and Solomon, we see Yahweh blessing the people of Israel, even though they're not wholeheartedly keeping his law. God is faithful to his people, and Abraham's descendants have become a great nation. Then in our reading today, we see God being faithful to his promise that Abraham's descendants would be a blessing to others. I looked up the words "bless" and "blessing" in the Oxford Dictionary, thinking, yeah, I think I know what they mean, but let's, you know, cover all the bases. So "bless" is the verb, and "blessing" is the noun. When we are talking about words, to bless is what you say, to call down divine favor on someone or something. The noun "blessing" are the words that you say, the invocation or the pronouncement. Blessing as the noun can also be the result of your words, the bestowal of design favor on that someone or something. What you do is bless, the words you say and the result are the blessing. I think bless and blessing can also apply to our actions. What we do. We can do something that brings favor from God into somebody's life. And the result of our action is God's favor acting out in the life of that person. In this story, we see God's people being a blessing to others. First, it's the young servant girl. She is a blessing to her mistress and master by sharing what she knows about the prophet in her homeland. She couldn't do anything about her master's condition, but she could speak up. In her position, it probably took courage for her to say something. Usually, slaves did not start conversations with their masters. They were there to respond to orders or to answer questions when they were asked. No one really cared what they thought. Even today, if you are introduced to royalty, you wait for them to speak first and then you respond. It is not your place to initiate the conversation. But this girl speaks up. Then we have Elisha. And Elisha was a blessing to both his king and to Naaman. He told the king, "Don't worry, we've got this, send him to me." And then he told Naaman what he could do to be made well. He offered what he had to give. And this time, what he had to give was the healing power of God. Quite an ability and quite a responsibility. After Naaman goes away angry with his wounded pride, it's his servants that approach him and convince him to do what the prophet asked. They could not make him well, but they could help him to take the most of the opportunity he was offered. They spoke up respectfully, knowing what would persuade him to act. They say, "You would do something difficult if that's what it would take. So why not do this simple thing?" They were appealing to his pride, and it worked. The slave girl and Elisha and Naaman's servants, each of these was a blessing to Naaman. They were links in the chain of Naaman receiving God's favor. We are drawn to Elisha as the heart of the story, but he wouldn't even know that Naaman needed help if the servant girl had not spoken up and shared what she knew. And Naaman would have gone home angry and frustrated if his servants hadn't said just what he needed to hear to follow through with the instructions. Each was a link, and each was important. Have you ever been a link in a chain leading to someone experiencing God's grace? Maybe you have, but you don't know about it. That's the thing. You have no idea what happens down the road after you've interacted with someone. Jesus is a link in the chain of the whole world experiencing God's grace. As a descendant of Abraham, Jesus fulfills the promise that through Abraham, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. His dying on the cross is the big way that Jesus is a blessing. But all through his life on earth, he was doing little blessings. But these little blessings made the world of difference to the people that he interacted with. And in our gospel reading, we see Jesus and a whole crowd of people have this leper come up to him. And this leper would have been isolated from the community. I'm not sure how he kind of wound up in the crowd without, you know, people probably parted like the Red Sea, so he could get in. And he says, "I know you could heal me if you want to." And what does Jesus do? He reaches out and actually touches the guy. Nobody's probably touched him for years. And Jesus says, "I do want you to be healed," and readily heals this fella. Like Elisha, Jesus was anointed by the Spirit with God's power to do God's will. And in this case, it was God's will that the leper be healed. The church, us, through Jesus, is included among the descendants of Abraham. It's just in a spiritual sense rather than in a flesh and blood and flesh sense. Based on that lineage, we have inherited the role of being a blessing to the world. And that's part of the Lord's Prayer we say regularly when we address the words to the Father, "Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven." God is in the business of blessing. And here in our everyday lives, we are God's agents going about God's business. So how can we be a blessing to the people around us, to family and co-workers, employers, employees, even people who bother us? And when I wrote this yesterday, I was thinking, yeah, it's all those other drivers on the roads in conditions like this. How about those strangers who serve us, those cashiers in stores, those clerks that help us out when we're looking for something, or the folks waiting on us in restaurants or bank tellers? Can you say something to bless these people? Can you do something that blesses? Even a kind word can be a blessing, a smile, or a greeting. Perhaps you are in a position to do more. We all find evangelism a bit awkward. I kind of, shake at the word. But it has been said that evangelism is just like one hungry person telling another hungry person where they found some food. We can speak up about what we know, and each of us is the expert on ourselves. We each know how we have experienced the grace of God. And when the time arises, we can share that with people. How has my faith in Jesus helped me? Maybe your faith has helped you deal with guilt or shame, fear or anger, pride, or finding a purpose in life. Don't be afraid to speak up like this young slave girl did. They spoke up to their masters, and we can speak up to those who cross our paths. And sometimes, I have experienced, it's actually easier to speak to a stranger than it is to somebody who knows me well. But you just may be a link in a chain that results in someone experiencing God's blessing. And it might be just what they need at that time. Jesus taught us that what we do for others, we do for him. Let us seek to bless those around us, as God in Jesus has blessed us. Amen.